The holidays are expensive. You're paying for gifts, travel, decorations, food, and before you know it, you've blown way past what you were planning to spend. Don't start the new year off with bad money vibes. Download Rocket Money to stay on top of your finances. The app pulls your income, expenses, and upcoming charges into one place, so you can get the clearest picture of your money. It shows how much to set aside for bills and how much is safe to spend for the month, so you can spend with confidence. No guesswork needed. Get alerts before bills hit, track budgets, and see every subscription you're paying for. Rocket Money also finds extra ways to save you money by canceling subscriptions you're not using and negotiating lower bills for you. On average, Rocket Money users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Start the year off right by taking control of your finances. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Welcome back, you horny little rats. It's time to smut up and listen.
Just a reminder for today's episode and all future episodes, our opinions are subjective. We don't advocate for kink shaming or author shaming. This is all in good smutty fun. Enjoy. And don't forget to check out patreon.com/smutupandlisten to listen to the r/smut podcast, where Riley and I will be doing blind reactions every Tuesday to Reddit erotica.
Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to a very special episode of Smut Up and Listen. We are lucky enough today to be joined by number one New York Times bestseller and U.S. Today bestselling author and romanticy heavy hitter, Carissa Broadbent. Thank you for being here with us today.
Thank you so much for having me. Also, thank you for like pumping up my ego with that introduction there, because I was listening to those things and I was like, oh my God, that sounds like a real author.
You are. I googled romanticy authors. Boom. Carissa Broadbent right there.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, you got SJM, you got Rebecca Yaros, you got Carissa Broadbent.
Wow. Thank you. Thank you for stroking my ego. I've been feeling a little low like the last week, so thank you.
No, you are amazing.
Yes.
I even told my dad, we're having like a real big author on the podcast tomorrow. You're not going to believe it.
I know. I've been telling everyone as well.
Yeah. Oh my husband and I go to Target and we see the new covers. They're all on the end caps. And I'm like, ugh, my friend Carissa sent me those in the mail. So
that's like what I do still. Like when I see if I know the author of any book that I see out in public, I'm like, my friend wrote that. It's not just like, somebody who followed me back on Instagram, like someone I've never spoken to. And my husband's like, yeah, okay, sure. You know that.
Oh, okay.
No, we're friends.
Yeah.
She replied to me one time, you know, on Twitter or something, but no.
That is the beginning of a beautiful friendship.
Yeah.
I agree. I mean, we're colleagues, right?
Yeah.
So I say it totally counts. And I say we are having an actual conversation at this point. So I would say that you totally have my permission to refer to me as quote unquote your friend Carissa forever henceforth from now.
Woo!
So
yes. Well, I'll tell everyone. We're putting it in our bio.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm add that to my back pocket.
You can totally do that. Yes. Just add that to like your list of personal descriptors.
Yes, we will. And so obviously we've been huge fans for years now. And we feel so fortunate to have you on our podcast. When we say that we are fans, we are huge fans. You are one of my like top read authors. I looked it up on my book tracking apps. You are right there.
Oh, thank you. That's why I have a career. So thank you for doing that.
So you were obviously kind enough to send each of us copies of the latest editions of the War of Lost Heart series with the gorgeous new covers. And what was the process creating the new covers like?
Oh my gosh. I was so excited to be able to do this. I also had like complete creative control over the covers because, for anyone who isn't aware, like who is listening, I was originally self-published. And now all of my existing books, in print at least, are with my publisher, Bramble. But the trilogy, like when I started this idea of like, you know, it's been 5 years, like I have a lot of new readers who like had not read the trilogy, which I published before my Crimes of Nyxia series, which is the one that went like, you know, book talk viral. I'm doing like scare quotes to anyone who's like listening to me. So I was thinking, you know, it might be time to like, I love the original cover art too, but it might, you know, trends have changed and everything. A lot of people thought it was young adult with the original cover art. And I thought like, it might be time to like give them some new covers. And originally I planned on doing it indie. Like I did not, I was going to just, they were going to remain self-published. And I was kind of like, I am a huge fan of artists. I went to school for graphic design. I'm like not very good anymore. I used to be good. Once upon a time, I was a pretty good artist. But I have just an immense admiration for artists and like the skill that goes into their craft. And I thought to myself, you know, I have the benefit of having a lot of name recognition now. And that means that I have kind of more freedom to do something that might be a little bit different, like to really work with an artist that I'm really in love with and feel passionate about. And I reached out to one of my favorite artists of all time, Arthur Wang, who does the True Black Tarot decks, because I have both of his tarot decks and I have them on my desk. Unfortunately, I don't have them beside me right now, fittingly, but I have them on my desk and I would like pull cards to just, I don't know anything about tarot, but I would just like look at the art and be like, wow, like what would this goddess be like? You know, like it just gives me inspiration to like look at this beautiful artwork. And I reached out to him completely expecting him to say no. And he did not. So it was really a dream to get to work with him. And we got to work on those together over the course of like a year, basically. And then I got my publisher involved and I kind of got to be like, here you go. It's all done. Like, here is everything. And they were kind enough to oblige me. So it was a really, really great experience.
That's awesome.
So cool.
Can we expect anything like that with the Crown of Nyxia series?
I mean, never say never. Maybe one day. Maybe one day. I feel really fortunate to have been able to work with so many incredible artists. Like, I say this all the time on social media, and I think it probably sounds like I'm just, like, talking. But, like, truly, genuinely, my favorite part of this job is the fact that I've gotten to work with so many incredible artists. And, you know, I was just thinking last night, actually, about how many special editions have been made of my books and how many incredibly talented people have contributed to those editions. It is like surreal. It's really surreal.
Yeah, that's so cool.
They're gorgeous covers. They're so beautiful.
They really are. They're so pretty. Well, I have them in my living room.
The dust jacket off, the actual like binding of the book is beautiful.
Yes, they're beautiful. Yes.
I'm glad we got to keep those because those are actually, they're a little bit tweaked, but they are the same designs under the jacket that were in the original indie covers. And they were done by like my best friend's sister. Like it was like, you know, like because we did these back in like 2020, you know, when these books first came out years ago now. So it feels also special to have like that piece of like the original history of the book like still in there. Yeah.
And I bet it's cool for your sister's friend too, that she could be like,
I hope so. Her name is Emily Jolovitz. She's very talented. She's a really talented artist.
So cool.
So pretty.
Our next kind of set of group questions are the writing process and the journey of the books. And one of my questions is, what is one writing habit that changed your career completely?
Ooh, that's a great question. There are a few. So I have sometimes a hard time focusing, like many people. And I realized pretty early on that my personality kind of resists routine sometimes, but the fact that I resist routine means that I like desperately need routine in order to be productive. So when I first began writing, I had a day job and I had a very demanding day job. So the first thing that I realized was that I have to come up with a routine that works for me, you know, pretty much every day, you know, and it has to work for like the version of me that actually exists, not like the imaginary version of me that will theoretically exist tomorrow, you know, like the version of me that's going to work out every day.
That's and such like, a good point.
Yeah. Yeah. Because for a long time, I was planning for that version of Carissa, you know, like this imaginary version who was going to like put in time before work and after work and like do it, you know, at 9 o'clock at night, like before I go to bed. Like, no, that it's not going to happen like that. She's not going to do it. So what I realized was in the case of my day job, I had what would work best for me, as crazy as it sounds, was waking up at 4:30 in the morning and having writing time, like from 6 a.m. Like I would go to like the coffee shop and I would write from like 6 a.m. to 8 a.m. and then like go to the office after that.
Okay.
Because I realized I worked with a lot of people on the West Coast and like across time zones. So like my work days would bleed, you know, to like 6, 7, 8 o'clock. And it was just not working. So that was very important for me. And it's still important. It was important even when I quit my day job. I had a very rigid work day and I very rarely worked on weekends unless I was like in a real crunch zone. Mm-hmm. And I'm glad I kept up that system because now I have a toddler. And I am currently pregnant with my next one.
Congratulations.
And that's why I'm a little, thank you. That's why I'm a little out of breath. I've been getting out of breath lately. and it has gotten more important, you know, because my workday is shorter. But I've realized like you can do so much with a 5-hour workday, like if you're very, very, very focused. So I have to be like ruthlessly focused with myself. So that was one thing that was a real game changer for me. And then the other thing was I exclusively write on distraction-free writing devices. Like,
okay,
I have like a collection
about this on Instagram.
I'm very nerdy about this. This is like, I won't even pretend that it's all like productivity. Like, it's also like my hobby, you know, like I just collect them. So
what is it? Yeah, tell me.
Yeah. Okay. Here, I have a spiel.
I'm ready.
There is a subreddit called Writer Decks. That was my first time where I realized there's like a term for these things. And basically it's like any device that just write, like that it does one thing and that one thing is writing. Like usually they have really small screens. So it's like you can only see a few lines of text. So you're not like going back. Like it's designed for someone who wants to like I do not go backwards when I draft, you know, like I will even like sometimes in a first draft, leave notes to myself being like, go back and add sword to this scene. Like if I'm halfway through an action scene and I'm like, oh, actually she needs her sword, you know, like instead of going back and doing it, like I'll just throw in a note. So the one that I've written most of my books on is called An Alpha Smart Neo. And some of you, if you are my age, I'm 33, so prime millennial age. Some of you might remember them from school, from like elementary school. They're like, they almost look like a calculator. They're like these plastic devices that have like a keyboard and like a little screen. And you just like type on them. And they're ancient. Oh. You get them on like eBay. But they're amazing. So I've written a bunch of books on that. There's like Free Write is a company that makes them. I have mixed feelings about Free Write, but we won't get into that here. but yeah, there's like a whole class of devices. And that was a game changer for me. Like I cannot draft on a laptop.
That is so cool. I didn't even know those existed.
It's like
it's a very niche audience.
Yeah. For your writing. That's so cool. I would need that if I were to write because my attention span is pew, pew, pew.
Yeah,
exactly.
I can barely read.
Yeah, I have to like, when I'm really in drafting mode, like I almost exclusively write in coffee shops. I don't write at home. And I don't bring my laptop, you know, so like I can't even, you know, like if there's an emergency, someone will call me. But like, I'm not even wasting time on email. And like, sometimes I backslide on this. But when I do, I notice because I get way less productive.
Yeah.
Oh, that's I so love cool, the self-control.
Though. Yeah, that is amazing.
Yeah. Is it self-control or is it just like, it's actually lack of self-control, right? It's like treating myself like a toddler because
you just know yourself into having self-control.
We like self-aware queens, Carissa. Self-aware.
I am self-aware. Like I said, the version of Carissa who exists today cannot handle having internet access on the computer that she's drafting on. Like that.
There you go. Yeah.
You'll wind up like on Facebook or TikTok.
Yeah. No. It's bad. It's bad.
Yeah. And let's see, has being an author changed your relationship with reading? And do you find yourself more critical of books as you're reading them?
Ooh, another, you guys are bangers. This is another good question. So the answer, like, absolutely yes. It changes your relationship with reading dramatically. And I have not met a single author who has not said this. It has changed. I'm not more critical of other books. I'm more critical of myself. Like, I cannot read romantasy books or even, like, often fantasy books unless it's, like, very different from what I write. While I'm drafting or kind of in certain phases of editing, like, it depends on kind of where I'm at in the process, because I'll read it and be like, oh my God, like, this is so good. Like, I'll never write anything good. I'm never, because I think I've talked to a lot of authors who feel this way. Through most of the writing process, we, like, hate ourselves and hate our books and are like, oh my God, I'll never write anything good ever again. And then my husband goes, you always say that. And then I say, no, but this time it's true. It's different this time. I need it. It's true this time. So a lot of times I can't read romantasy when I'm going through, like, that, because it just, like, makes me feel bad, you know? But also it can really inspire me. So sometimes you have to, like, make yourself read it. But I find I read a lot more outside of my genre now, which I don't think is a bad thing, because I enjoy reading virtually all genres. And I feel like there's always something to learn. You know, you learn pacing from thrillers, and, like, you can learn, you know, dialogue from contemporary romances, and you can learn, like, tension from, like, whodunits and stuff. Like, there's always something to learn.
I would have thought it would have been opposite. I thought you would have read romantasy and been like, oh, that's not how I would have done it. It's all wrong. Yeah. Because in our heads, you're like, amazing. Your books are amazing. So I was thinking you would read it and be like, ugh, trash.
I am saying that, but, like, to myself.
No, I never would have thought that.
I am honored by that. No, I think that we, if there's an author out there who has, like, that degree of self-confidence, like, number one, almost certainly a man, like, for sure a dude.
Yeah.
And it's not me.
So are there any different plots in the Crown of Nyaxia or the War of Lost Heart series that you were initially going to go with before you changed it to what is published currently?
There is one that sticks out to me. So the War of Lost Hearts trilogy, I wrote before the Crowns of Nyaxia series. And it was, Daughter of No World was not my first book. I wrote and I self-published three books before that. But they were not good. They were bad books. Like, people, because Goodreads is, like, forever. Like, you can never remove anything from Goodreads. I get people asking me about them sometimes, and I'm like, oh, honey, you don't.
You're like, please don't. Please don't.
Yeah, you don't want to. And then my very first book, very, very, very first book, literally, I'm not exaggerating here. Like, I think, like, literally 19 copies were printed. You know, like, that's the degree of, like, how many people have seen this book. And every once in a while, somebody will pop up on, like, my reader group and be like, look what I found. And I'll be like, wow, like, oh my God, crazy. But anyway, all this to say, so I'd written books before, but I had never completed a series. And the War of Lost Hearts was kind of a learning experience in that way for me, because it was my first time. It's also a very epic, you know, it's really epic fantasy. So it was my first time dealing with a full complete arc. And I was still kind of ironing out my own process for planning and, like, how I like to structure series. So there is one notable thing that had changed. I get questions about it all the time. And I am honest that it's just because of my imperfect brain. There is a character who shows up very briefly in Daughter of No Worlds, a very kind of a character named Miracel, who's like she's like a very kind of unusual, like, personality. And she was going to have, like, a whole subplot. Like, there was going to be, like, a whole plot there. And then I ended up having to cut it. Like, it just didn't work anymore. And I don't regret it, because it was the right decision for the series. But I wish I had been able to tell her story a little bit more. I did put in Easter eggs, like, throughout the series, so that if you're paying a lot of attention, you can figure it out. I've had a few people figure it out as to, like, what her backstory is and what her deal was. But yeah, I kind of abandoned poor Miracel. Oh. And she had a really cool story. So I wish I'd been able to get it in there.
Oh, when I go back and do a reread, I'll have to pay extra close attention to that.
Yeah. Pick out the eggs. What was your big I've made it moment when it clicked for you that you're an extremely successful published author?
Oh my gosh. You know, I still don't feel like I am one. Like, when you said that, I'm like, oh, is that what I am? You know what's crazy is that, thank you. Thank you. You guys are stroking my ego today. What's kind of crazy is that still to this day, so I've had like so many incredible things happen in my career that I'm so grateful for. I mean, just the fact that like when you introduced me as the number one New York Times bestselling author, I was like, I mean, I think that might have been the first time I had heard someone introduce me like verbally out loud that way. I was like, oh my God, I am. Like, that's crazy. So I've had all these big things happen. And yet, it's still the things that happened early in my career that had like the greatest emotional impact on me. Like, I still remember to this day, it was right around the time when Children of Fallen Gods, the second War of Lost Hearts book, came out. And my audience was very, very small at that time. And it was like I had seen the first fan art that somebody had ever made of any of my characters. And it's something I had not commissioned, just like art that they made because they love the series. And I was like shaking. Like I was so happy.
Yeah.
Like I think that that's still, I was probably happier and like more excited in that moment than I was when I hit number one on the New York Times bestseller list. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
And one of the few downsides of, well, it's not a downside, it's just an evolution, is that once you start doing things professionally and once things like the scale of everything goes up, your expectations for yourself change constantly. You're kind of on a constant treadmill. Mm-hmm. So I really treasure a lot of those early moments. Like that fan art really sticks out to me. I can like see it perfectly in my mind's eye.
That's amazing.
Oh, yes. Yeah, I love that.
Everybody send Carissa fan art.
Yeah, do it.
I do. I love fan art. And there's so much of it. I'm like, there's so much now that it's like, I often miss it. I'm not on social media nearly as much as I used to be because it can get scary out there. So sometimes I miss it. Like sometimes I don't see it. And that makes me sad. But it's just incredible. It's incredible to see.
I know. People's imaginations are wild.
I know. Even we've had fan art. We'll send it in the group chat. We're like, oh my God. It's so fun to see.
That's amazing. I love that.
Yeah. So if you had a time machine and you were able to go back in time to give your pre-published self one piece of advice, what would it be?
Ooh, okay. I have thought about this one, actually. So I know I probably sound like I'm like bullshitting when I say this, but I don't have a lot of like regrets in general because my philosophy is like, you know, everything is part of the road that got us to here, right? Mm-hmm. So I wouldn't go back in time and like butterfly effect anything that would like fuck that up. I'm not going to mess with that. So there are very few things, like there were definitely things that I did that were like not effective, you know, business-wise. Like I said, I wrote three entire books, actually four, because there was one that was never published at all, that are now not available, you know, like, but I needed to write them to become the author that I am today. So I have no regrets there. But one big thing is I never thought I would be notable as a public figure. And as a result, like early in my career, I was not as careful about like my privacy as I thought that as I would be now, because I thought it wouldn't matter. Like I thought nobody would ever care to like try to find my, you know, just try to find my phone number or something. Like I just, it was never an issue. So I do wish I had been more careful about privacy like earlier in my career. And then other than that, the other thing was I put a lot of pressure on myself when I really didn't need to. Like now, there's a very big machine behind me, like publishers and like, there's just like a lot of factors that go into like a release date, you know, or like into a deadline. But early in my career when I was indie, that was not really the case. And yet I still held myself to like wildly unreasonable deadlines, like very firmly. And it was just not worth it. You know, like I wish I could tell my former self, like, just chill, like relax. Yeah. It's fine.
All right. Well, now we're going to get into your writing process, right?
No, book specific.
But yeah, you're right. Oh my gosh. Sorry, Chris. We're going to get into book specific questions. And can you briefly describe the War of Lost Hearts series to someone who hasn't read it?
Sure. So it is an epic fantasy trilogy with lots of romantic elements, like most of my books. And it follows a young woman named Tisana, who is a magic wielder, as she escapes slavery and she has to try to join this powerful organization of magic wielders. And in order to do that, she has to team up with this very, let's say, grumpy and reluctant wielder with a speckled past, as one has, named Max. Mm-hmm. And they get pulled into some really, gosh, how do I even put it? Some really dark shit. And a lot of like really sinister war machinations that explode across the continent.
Oh, wonderful.
We love AKA a morally pure gray gold. Man.
Yeah.
And my next question is, very deep and serious. So we need to buckle up for it.
I'm ready.
Marry, fuck, kill. Mm-hmm. Rain, Max, and Asar.
Ooh, I'll kill Rain.
No.
Okay. I'm going to say something controversial. You guys want like a something controversial for your clickbait from here on out?
Yes.
Rain is like easily. Okay. I love all of my book children. Right. So there's a baseline here of like general love. Right. But Rain is like easily my least favorite MMC that I've ran. Like no. Easily. He's just of the ones that like I would want to be. Okay. I don't want to go to that pub. I don't want to go. I'm tired. I would like to stay home. And he's so, I don't know. He's my least. I love him, but he like of the ranking, he is like the one I would definitely least want to be with myself. Asar is probably like the best in bed. So I'll fuck Asar. And I think I would marry Max. He's just he's such a good partner, you know, and Asar is too. Like actually Max and Asar are kind of similar types, but yeah, I think I would marry Max. He's a very, very good partner.
He's a good man.
He's a good man.
Wonderful. Poor Rain.
Was he your guys' favorite?
I do love Rain, but Max is like top tier.
Yeah.
Rain.
I love them all.
Yeah. Yeah. We do love them all.
You created them.
Yeah. But that means I hate them sometimes too.
That's fair. That's fair.
My next question is actually about my favorite character in the series. Did you always know you wanted Reishi to be a sentient entity after they left their body, or were they always going to stay in a body?
I'm thinking, because I wrote this book in 2018, so I'm like, what was my plan? Like, I actually, Reishi, the whole concept of Reishi was always, that was one of the things that was always clear in my mind. There was a lot about the series that kind of evolved as I was writing it, but that entity, I did, because I had kind of explored stories with like similar ideas, like actually when I was like 13, like when I was writing stories like a long time ago. And sometimes your 13-year-old self comes up with like some kind of interesting shit. So I was like,
yeah,
I would like to re-explore this idea. So that that aspect was always firm. And then there were aspects about like, are we doing spoilers? Are we being spoilery or no?
That's up to you.
The series
has been out. It's completed. We can spoil it.
Okay. So just like, I guess to anyone listening, major, major spoiler alert for like the second book in this trilogy. Definitely like Aoife's character and like the details of her backstory and even her fate, like where she ends up in the third book. A lot of that stuff kind of evolved as I was writing it, especially her fate, because I really struggled with that. Like with it just, there's a lot of morally gray characters in this series. And it intrigues me as a writer. I will always write lots of morally gray characters. But sometimes you really wrestle with like fate, like who gets like some kind of a redemption, like who doesn't. Sometimes people deserve it and don't get it, and vice versa. Like it was really challenging to figure out.
Yeah, they are easily, and I don't know if I've ever heard someone say that they're their favorite character, but they are so, like you said, complex. Their arc is super complex, very morally gray. You don't know where the fate of it is going to go, and it's just...
Thank you.
And Shelby is hypercritical of books, so
she is.
I am.
It is hard to get a 5-star from this girl.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and all of these books are 5-stars. Like they are. This series itself is one of my most favorite series of all time. So,
oh my gosh, I'm honored by that. Thank you. Thank you.
So we are visual learners here. So do you have a fan cast if the series were to get turned into a TV show or a movie? Just anyone in your mind that would just be the dream fan cast?
Oh, yeah.
You know, I always wish I had some better answers here. When I'm writing, I imagine characters, I often describe it as like, I almost imagine them as if they are animated characters where it's like, you see their features and like they're, you know, but like, it's not like a person, like I'm not like visualizing Charlize Theron or whoever, like it's, I don't know why that was the name that came to mind. So maybe I was. But you know, like if you look at an animated character, there are lots of actual humans who could like embody that character. And that's often how I think of it. The one exception to that had been that I remember from the beginning, when I was writing The Serpent in the Wings of Night, I really, and people like are always shocked by this, which is funny to me because I feel like it's really funny the reactions I get here. I really imagined Rain as like a Jason Momoa type. Like that was like,
oh.
There, like sometimes people depict him as like pretty. And I'm like, no, like that's not, he's like a burly guy, you know, like not that Jason Momoa is not pretty. He's a very pretty man, but he's not like a, like an elven.
He's like pretty. A man's man.
He's like a manly, burly, pretty, you know? But The War of Lost Hearts has been out long enough now, and I've been asked this question a lot, that I've had from Max. I started to envision Max as Daniel Henney, who he was in the Wheel of Time series. He was in Criminal Minds. He was in like a lot of K-dramas as like the hot like love interest like 15 years ago.
Okay.
I had a big crush on him when I was in high school. I think he has sadly aged out of the role at this point. But more recently, I've had people say Manny Jacinto, which love Manny Jacinto, would happily cast Manny Jacinto as Max. And like very, very recently, I've had a lot of people say, I have yet to watch Heated Rivalry. I know that's like, I know.
I haven't either. It's okay.
I know.
It's a slippery slope.
I know. I need to. My assistant is like the queen of the Heated Rivalry like fandom. Like she's like a minor celebrity in the Heated Rivalry fandom because she makes wallpapers and stuff. One day she's going to like pin me down somewhere and like force me to
make you watch it.
You should let her do that.
Yeah.
I know. I should. It's going to happen. I'm having a brain fart though. The other
Hudson
one.
Hudson Williams.
Yes. And I actually could really, just from pictures, because he's got like a good grumpy face, you know, like he has a good kind of grumpy socially awkwardness about him.
Oh, and his PR,
handsome.
All of his interviews, hilarious. He seems so funny.
They both seem like really lovely guys. I'm very happy for them.
Yes.
And I hope that the weirdness of their fandom does not rip them apart as people.
I know. People are so weird on the internet.
People are so fucking weird on the internet.
Yeah, I got my husband to watch a few episodes. I was like, oh, do you want to watch this hockey drama with me? And he was like, I guess. And then like 5 minutes in, he was like, wait a minute. What is this? And I was like,
What a good way of describing that. That's like a good, that reminds me of when I was trying to, I wanted to see this like anime movie. And I said to my friend who always comes to like art house movies with me, I was like, hey, do you want to come see this foreign Japanese film with me?
There you go.
So we have like, similar strategy here.
Yeah. And I'm like, wait a minute. You tricked me.
We got there and she was kind of like, okay.
Okay. You write open door romance as part of your job. So you're basically an expert. What is the most unhinged smut you've read?
Oh, this is an easy answer. I have openly said at like literary festivals, you know, been like, this is like the most memorable book that I read all year. And I am not ashamed. I stand behind it. Kiss of the Basilisk.
I just
Wonderful.
Finished the second one.
Such a good one.
I have not read the second one, but I did an event. I read it because when I was on tour, I was fortunate enough to do an event with Lindsay Staub. She was my conversation partner. And it was like probably the most, like, she was just amazing. She's such a lovely person. And it was probably the most fun I've ever had at one of my events. Like, it was so much fun. And I was reading the book because I try to read at least a little bit of my conversation partner's books so that I have like some context. I was reading it on a plane. And I remember I got to like the first like freaking 5%.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like texting my assistant. I was being like, we're like literally 5% into this book. And this man transformed his magical snake cum into like a remote vibrator. Like, she set out to do something and she did that thing. And I really admire that as a creator.
Ah, such a good one. I was going to say, depending on what you said, we were going to do an episode on it and be like, our friend Carissa recommends this book to everyone, but
we have covered that one.
Yeah,
you've already covered it. It's a wild ride, right? I have to read the second one still, but I just had like, I always think, okay, side rant here, but like there are people on, you know, well, I'm being a little biased here because a lot of people feel this way towards romanticism as a genre, right? Like there are people who are snobs, right? Who are like, mm-hmm. Oh, that's not like, you know, literary or whatever. Well, first of all, I will say I put a lot of effort into the literary and artistic value of what I do. I take immense pride in it and I'm always trying to progress and do something different and creative artistically. But aside from that whole argument as to like what counts as quote unquote literary merit or whatever, I feel like any creator, the best thing that you can aspire to do is to leave an impression on someone and to do so in a way that's like intentional, you know, like the impression that you set out to make up upon someone, like to create something that's memorable and interesting. And I think that that is like extremely valuable and like an extremely difficult skill to master. And I think Kiss of the Basilisk made such an impression on me because I felt like it did that, you know, like yeah. It was like you read it and you were clearly like, this was what Lindsay set out to create. And it was like a very memorable experience.
It was. If you yeah. ever see her again, though, you tell her I read that second book and she owes me therapy. My heart is broken.
Oh, okay. I have to read it. Yeah, she is lovely. I would love to do an event with her again. She was so fun. We had so much fun together. It was one of those events where like everyone afterwards was like, how long have you guys been friends? And I'm like, I met her like 45 minutes ago. Like, I just
love that.
Yeah, it was great. She's lovely.
I want to know what goes on inside that head because that book was unlike anything we've ever read before. It was insane.
It's crazy. And I loved how in the indie version, because that was another book that was originally self-published. I think it like sums up to me like so much about like her and how like hilarious she's as a person that like the blurb on the back was like a wild ride, Lindsay's mom. Like it was just,
oh, no.
Just hysterical. So funny.
Lindsay must have a cool mom.
Yeah.
She seemed, I've never met her, but she seems like a lovely lady.
What is the craziest moment you've had that you attribute to your successful career?
Well, I mean, one of them might have been talking about like Basilisk, but with Lindsay Staub. let's see. Gosh, there's so many. I mean, and it just happens so fast. Like, it was also a strange experience because Serpent really blew up on TikTok in a very big way, like very quickly. And also, when that happened, I was like having a baby. So it was like I was a little bit like distracted. And then it's also like it's on the internet, right? So it's like, you're not seeing it like out in your day-to-day life, really. It's like, mm-hmm. Oh, you see numbers getting higher on a screen, but it's kind of like distant. And I remember when I had my first ever event and I really felt, I mean, again, I was prepared to be an indie author for my whole career. And indie authors don't get books in bookstores typically and don't do author events. And I was like totally resigned to that. Like I thought there are lots of indie authors who are making like mid six figures a year and you don't even know like their names. Like they're not in wow. bookstores. They're no, it's a real thing. So I was always like, I made my trade-off there, you know? So when I had my first event, it was really overwhelming and incredible. It was amazing because it was the first time I was kind of seeing it all in person. Mm-hmm. And then another big one was the first time I went to a Polycon, which was like my first book convention. And that was another moment where it was like, you know, you get to be like a niche celebrity for like 3 days. Okay. Anytime you get to see it in person and meet readers in person, it is very surreal.
Yeah, I always thought it was an interesting dynamic too for successful authors because in the book world, I feel like you're a pretty household name as far as the romantasy genre is, but then you can still go out in the world and be a normal person. I mean, I'm sure there's some super fans that would recognize your face and be like, oh, hey, Carissa, like, has that happened before?
And it's happened a few times. But I also think, I mean, I'm also recognizable. Like I have red hair, like long red hair. Yeah. Like people recognize me, especially like when I'm at a Polycon, it's like people recognize me because they know why they're there, you know?
Yeah.
They recognize the authors. It happened like once or twice, but not frequently. I did have one time a really awkward experience where I was, like I said, I write at coffee shop. So I was writing at my coffee shop and there was a woman who came in. And she was reading Serpent and I walked by her and I was kind of very awkwardly like, I wrote that book. And she was like, but I was like walking, like
she's probably like, what'd she say?
And then she like flipped to the back and she was like, oh yeah, that's you.
I don't know what I would do if that happened to me. If just casually the author walked by as I was reading her book.
Yeah, I'd be like, I'd be dumbfounded.
Well, imagine if she was like, oh, I don't like it. Like, you know, like imagine if you're reading it and you're like,
take it back.
Yeah, I just can't get through this. So that was like, yeah. But yeah, I always say that I am like exactly the right amount of famous. And even this was a difficult adjustment, but it was mostly a difficult adjustment in terms of like the way I interact with social media now is very different than the way that I did 3 years ago. Like I've had to remove myself from social media. Like the first time you scroll Reddit or, you know, I've never been a TikTok user really, but like, and you get like a jump scare of like someone talking about your book and like, maybe they don't like it, which is completely fine. Like, you know, they should be able to talk about not liking my book on Reddit or whatever. But I prefer not to see it. So it does mean that like, I can't interact with the internet the way that I used to. But I always say I am very happy with my level of success and my level of fame. Like, I think about authors who are more famous than me and had it happen faster, like Rebecca Yarros, who seems like a lovely person. But like her life was changed, you know, because she got so famous, you know, like, and I'm like, I'm good right here.
Yeah. It seems like just a really good balance where you still, obviously you're successful, but you still get to be a person.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I haven't had, I think I heard a story once of, you know, Rebecca, somebody, and she talked about this publicly. This is not me, like, you know, spilling her secrets or whatever, but of people, like, when she would get off of planes, like, people, like, following her, like, waiting for her when she got off of planes, like, figuring out which plane she was taking based on her, like, tour routes and stuff. Like,
that's terrifying.
That's terrifying. That's terrifying. And, you know, it's, like, 0.0001% of people who do it. But all it takes is for, like, one or two people to be that level of obsessed to really, like, make your life different.
Yeah. And people take their books very seriously. For some people, I'm sure books are very real for them.
Yes.
Like, what happens next? Tell me immediately. When's the next book coming out?
Yeah. Yeah. We like a nice normal level of enthusiasm, you know?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I know. Poor Penn Cole. I see her like updating people on her very last book because they're like rioting in the streets that she's not done with it yet. But she has like a whole life going on where she can't finish it right now. And I just am like, the fact that she even has to give updates is so sad to me that people are that level of psychotic.
People can be cruel. I mean, this is what I mean when I say that my relationship with social media has changed a lot. So I realized, I think everyone who is a public figure in any way on the internet today has a moment where they learn the hard way. Like, oh, if I'm talking to like my friends or people who know me, like the way that you interact with social media as like an individual person in your personal life, everything that anyone sees, they are filtering through their perception of you as they know you, you know, being like, oh, I already have a preconceived notion of Carissa and who she is, and I know her on a personal level. But when you're talking to 200,000 people, everyone's got something different that they are filtering that through. And you just can't say something in 180 characters that someone cannot misinterpret in a way that you don't intend or see in a way that you don't intend. Like, you just have to interact differently, knowing that a lot of people who do not know you and do not have that context to filter what they're seeing from you, they just don't have it. So there's that aspect of it. And then there is also the aspect of, well, honestly, to be like totally blunt with you, when the new War of Lost Hearts covers were revealed, that was a big turning point moment for me with how I interact with social media, because that was the first time where I got kind of the experience that you're referencing that Penn had, where it's like people who claim to be fans of you or your books kind of being like cruel to you in the name of being fans of you and your books, which is like a weird dichotomy. Like if someone's a hater and they're mean to me, it's kind of like, okay. But like, it's always it's a very weird experience for someone to claim, I love these books so much, so I'm going to like send you vomit emojis and like, you know, harass the artist. You know what I mean?
Like, that's just feel entitled to it.
Exactly. It's a very weird experience. It's a very weird experience. And it made me realize a big turning point for me was when I was like, the internet doesn't exist if you don't look at it. Like, this is like such a small percentage of actual people. Like, there's no one coming up to me in the street and being like, how dare you change your covers? You know, like, if you just don't look at it, it doesn't exist. There are probably people who are angry that my release date for Lion is a full year after the last Nyaxia book. But like, I don't know, because I'm not looking at their comments. And if I don't see them, they don't exist to me.
Yeah.
Good point. And a year is nothing. I just finished an unfinished series. I texted Shelby about it yesterday. I finished a series. I thought it was a duology,
And then I got to the end, and the second book in the duology came out in 2024. And I found out that the next one, because she got published, so congratulations. But 2027, a year is nothing. I could wait a year. Now I have to wait 2 years.
It happens. Yeah. And it's very common with like the pickups too, because it's like they need to, it also takes, like when a book is done, like The Lion and the Deathless Dark, which is coming out in August, it is now February, right? Like that book is done. Like we are just like finishing touches on the proofreading pass. It takes like 7 months just to like print the stupid thing and like get it where it needs to go, you know, in mm-hmm. traditional publishing. So there's just like that switch over from indie to trad. I mean, I think the gap from Ashes to Songbird ended up being like 18 months when all was said and done, because it was like they had to, it's probably the same thing happening with the series you're reading, Charlotte, where it was like they have to put out the first books and that mm-hmm. takes like 6 months each. And then it's like yes. you have to get through the next one. Mm-hmm. So yeah, there's a lot of cogs.
I know. And it's stuff that people don't even think about either. I was trying to explain it to my husband because I fully crashed out yesterday. I was like, I'm not going to know what happens until 2027. And I was trying to explain to him, like, we don't know what happens in the publishing world. There's so much stuff that has to go into it because she's not just publishing it herself. She has to go through all mm-hmm. of these different hoops now. And yeah, so.
Yeah, it's very different. Patient. I mean, an indie, it's like you press a button and 48 hours later, like the book is out there. Like The Ashes and the Star-Cursed Kang was, in hindsight, not a great writing experience because I was pregnant. And that meant, like, that's the mother of all deadlines there. I was having like an actual human baby, right? So it was like, I had to be done. And there's no wiggle room. You know, it's not like you can mess with, you know, the printing timeline or anything. Like, you just got to be done. So you go from like a system where it's like most indie authors, for the most part, are finishing, like they put the finishing touches on the book, they do their proofreading, and then like the book is out, you know, a couple of weeks later. Like that's often how it ends up being. And I'll be honest, sometimes it was a couple of days later for me. Like there are books that like I finished the proofreading pass and like the deadline to upload was 2 hours from now, you know. It's very different. Yeah, stressful. It was stressful.
I can't even imagine.
No.
Yeah, I'm laughing a little bit manically, just being like, it was
stressful. It's fine. My next question is, what would be your desert island book?
Ooh, that's a great question. My favorite book of all time is The Song of Achilles by Madeline Miller.
So good.
Probably that or Cersei. They're kind of tied for me. I love both of them. She's just such an incredible writer. If I ever met her, I would cry. I would die. I would do both of those things.
Just cry and die.
Okay, internet, link the two together. Link Carissa and Madeline. Let's get them together for coffee date.
Yeah.
I would just die. I would die.
Well, don't do that.
I would spiritually die. There you go.
All right. And this next question actually comes from, her name is Jenna. She's also on this podcast with us. She just couldn't be here today. But this question comes from Jenna. So Dylan Efron pulled inspiration from Crowns of Nyaxia in his Viennese. I don't know.
She spelled it wrong. Vietnamese.
Viennese waltz.
Oh, is it Viennese? I don't watch Dancing with the Stars, so I don't know.
She's a Dancing with the Stars queen. She could tell you about every single person on that show. Okay, I'm going to restart that then so I don't sound like a silly goof. Dylan Efron pulled inspiration from Crowns of Nyaxia and his Vietnamese waltz on Dancing with the Stars Halloween night, and we saw on your social media that you were gagged. What did you think about it, and how did it make you feel knowing he was a big fan of the series, and how, and do you now have a connection to Zach?
I'm sorry to do this to you. You were correct the first time. It's Viennese, like Vienna.
Oh my God.
Italy, not Vienna.
Oh my God. I'm such a dummy.
The Italians are going to cancel you.
Yeah.
I know. And
I thought Charlotte said Vietnamese. Sorry.
I thought it was. No. I don't watch Dancing with the Stars. I don't know.
Oh, that's true. Viennese, I don't either.
Viennese. But to be fair, okay. The only reason I know is because that was the only time I have ever watched Dancing with the Stars. I was like blown away by that. Actually, I was thinking of that after the fact, after I answered one of your questions. That was like, what was something that left you like star? That was one that was like surreal to me. That was unbelievable to me. And also it was a huge, it was very flattering because he picked like a deep cut. Like he was inspired by Slaying the Vampire Conqueror, which is like not my most popular book. You know, it's one of my personal favorites. So yeah. I mean, he blended like two of my, like, it wasn't just like Rain and Araya, who is like my most popular book. So I was like, oh my God, like Tillman Efron. Like I was just blown away by that. It really totally made my week.
I would reach out and be so like, cool. Let me meet up with doing? Zach. Yeah, what's Zach up to?
Okay, but Dylan's pretty cool too. Dylan and Zach, what are you both doing? You want to come hang out?
I mean, I would say that Dylan is my favorite brother. I mean, yeah. Just unbiased.
At this point, you have to say, yeah.
Unless Zach wants to, like, you know, come tell me how much he loves my books, and then maybe he could be the favorite brother.
There you go. Perform for Carissa. And you know he can. He was in High School Musical.
I know. Can you imagine a musical version of one of my books? That would be so funny. I would
watch the heck out of that.
I'm a musical theater girl. Yeah, I would love it.
There's when I found out my 4-year-old is into musical theater. So she wanted to watch SpongeBob. I pulled SpongeBob up on Amazon, and then she saw the live with Ethan Slater, and she's like, I want to watch that one. She sat and watched the entire thing, and I was like, oh.
Really?
Oh, my goodness. Yep.
I was like, we don't like him.
Yeah, I know. He's a controversial personality right now. Yeah, but apparently a talented Broadway performer. So, hey.
Yeah. A man.
Are you working on anything new currently? And is there anything you'd like to shout out or promote before we say goodbye?
So I just wrapped up. I had a little bit of a delay with the final Crowns of Nyaxia. Right now, my project is the final Crowns of Nyaxia book, which is surreal. I mean, I can't believe that is an 8-book-long series, and I'm going to be wrapping it up, which, by the way, will never write an 8-book-long series ever again. Never. I don't know what I was thinking. Never, ever, ever again. So that's really surreal. I was a little delayed because through the first like 4 months of my pregnancy, I was like a mess. It was really bad. And then I also had to pause because I was working on a proposal to get together like ideas and a synopsis and stuff for my next series, which is also surreal to think about. So I'm very excited to be able to talk more about that at some point in the next 1 to 2 years. But yeah, currently working on the last Crowns of Nyaxia book.
It's crazy that's 8 books now.
It's crazy. Like, to those of you who can't see me, there's a 1,000-yard stare happening right now. It's crazy. Never again. My next project will be no more than a trilogy ever again.
Mm-hmm. There's nothing wrong with a nice duology.
I love a duology.
Uh-huh. Maybe a nice standalone.
Yeah, that'd be even better. I don't know I think it's like a lot of skill to pull off a really good standalone. Mm-hmm. I would like to be able to do it.
You can do it.
Thank you. Yeah, Thank you for your faith. Thank you. Wow. I'll get off this call and be like, I can. Yeah.
Google yourself. Google top romanticy authors.
I'm not going to do that.
I'm telling you.
I am not Googling myself. Are you kidding?
Just that. It's just the little AI clip at the top, and that's it.
Just read that blurb and be done.
Oh, okay. Yeah. All right. That's it.
We'll just grab all of the positive reviews and then email them to your publisher so she could pass them along.
There we go. Find like the nicest thing that anybody has ever said about me and be like, look at this and nothing else. Like, just this.
Yeah. Well, to be fair, I've never heard anyone say anything bad. So.
Neither have I.
Oh, wow. That's genuinely touching to me. Thank you.
So in our little bubble, you are just mwah, mwah, mwah.
That's great. That's great to hear. And that's the only bubble people that counts to me.
Yes. Well, thank you so much for being here. Yes. We're going to change our bio to friend of Carissa Broadbent.
Yeah.
Yes, please do. It's sanctioned.
Thank you.
Well, thank you. We appreciate you so much for coming on.
Yeah, I had so much fun. Thank you so much for having me. I hope that you all have a wonderful day today.
You too.
Bye-bye.
All right. Well, if you liked this episode, make sure you rate, review, and subscribe.
Follow us on Instagram at @smutupandlistenpodcast and on TikTok at @smutupandlisten.
Tell your friends, but not your mom. And we'll see you later, you horny little rats.
Bye.
You ain't heard about Moto Casino? Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto. I like my slots hot. Moto's free to play, like food stamps. In line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic. Keep your eyes on the road. Hop on Moto Casino. Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly. Moto, America's hottest free-to-play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's so-